Welcome to the Tag Republic podcast, a weekly chat with Carolina Guzik about all things marketing. Some episodes are short tips that you can implement in your business right away, while others are in-depth conversations with industry leaders. Whether you're a new photographer searching for some knowledge or an established professional with years of experience, Carolina offers fresh and innovative advice that can help you transform your photography business.
This episode is sponsored by The Art of Pinning, a self-paced Pinterest class for wedding and lifestyle photographers. If you are having a hard time driving traffic into your website, or SEO is overwhelming you, or the people that are visiting your website are not the kind of visitors, aka they're not converting into clients, then this class is for you. You can find more information at www.thetalkrepublic.com/Pinterest, or just follow the link in the notes. Now, enjoy this episode. Welcome, friends, to another episode of The Talk Republic. I'm Carolina Guzik, your host. And today, for the second or maybe even a third time, Corey Potter, all the way from Fuel Your Photos. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to talk today.
I am really excited because this is a topic that I know very little about and everybody's talking. And I know there is some like amazing things to it, and some like maybe we should be worried about things. So since you're an expert, I'm so glad to pick your brain.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun.
Awesome. Well, so before we jump into this chat GPT or AI, whatever it's called, what about, Corey, you tell us who you are and what do you do?
Well, I'm Corey Potter, and I was a wedding photographer for about 10 years, did about 250 weddings. My wife and I had a business, and it was successful for us primarily because of the way that I built my website, and my online marketing was really just bringing in as many leads as we could possibly want. And after we started having children, we were like, do we really want to do wedding photography forever? And started kind of transitioning out of doing full-time wedding photography. And I kind of got back to my roots, which was web development. I started doing web development before I was a wedding photographer, back right in college. And I was going to build a business on that. And whenever I got into photography, I just loved it so much that I started going with photography. But, you know, whenever things started changing, I was like, you know, I could go back into web development and online marketing and SEO strategies. So that's what I did. And I started building an audience while I was still a wedding photographer. I would go to different places and speak about SEO for photographers, and, you know, just kind of started slowly building a Facebook group. And that was the Fuel Your Photos Facebook group. It started with just 100 people from the first conference that I went to and spoke about SEO. And then it went from there. Now it's almost 30,000 people. And I brought on a business partner, Dylan. He and I basically decided we wanted to just try to create the go-to source of information about SEO for photographers, a place you could trust what you are hearing, that we're not going to try to scam you or sell you something that's, you know, there's just so much out there. It's hard to know who to trust. So we wanted to make a trustworthy source of information about SEO. And that's what we've been doing.
It is an absolutely amazing group and a really great program. I have to admit that I was on page 7. And thanks to all of you and your help, now I'm on page 1. We did a one-on-one. I'm very active on the group. I ask a lot of questions because I want answers. So I highly recommend, if you are listening to this episode, to go check out their Facebook group and their program. Really good.
Sweet. Thanks.
Awesome. Well, so today we're going to talk about ChatGPT and or any AI prompt promoter. I don't even know what the name of that thing is. Like, let's start right at the beginning. What is ChatGPT? What is it? Because clearly I don't even know.
That's a question that could go very deep. But in general, ChatGPT is an interface for a large language model. And this particular large language model is owned by OpenAI. OpenAI is a company that started many years ago working towards creating innovative AI tools. Now their mission is to create general artificial intelligence in the future. And so they also own DALL-E 3 now is the, what we're up to, which is an image generation. It's very, it's one of the main competitors to like Midjourney. Those are like the two top image generator platforms that most people are using. But ChatGPT is the agent interface. It's basically a way for a regular person to just query their large language model with a normal chat. And this is why it blew up so fast. It came out last year in November for public use, and it was the fastest growing app to 100 million active users or something like that. I can't remember the exact stat, but at that point, it had grown faster than any other app. And it actually got beaten by Threads this year. So it's funny, we're in this age of like really fast adoption of new technology. But ChatGPT was magical because it feels like a normal chat. You can just go in there and start typing and it will speak back to you as if it were a person. And it's trained to use the sort of language that a, you know, just like an assistant would use. Someone who is your own personal assistant, they're trying to be helpful. They're it's trained to be useful, helpful, and harmless. And so a large language model could do anything. If you have a raw large language model and you query it and it doesn't have any protection for what it can return all kinds of things, including hate and, you know, anything terrible that you can think of. If there's, if it can be done with language, these large language models can output that kind of thing. And so the big companies like OpenAI and like Microsoft and Anthropic, there's a lot of big companies right now, they're working on guardrails to make it so that with all this power that we've unleashed, we're trying to make sure that we're doing good with it and not doing bad things with it. At least that's the goal. But you can also get open source models that you can run locally on your computer that will do many of the same things, and you can kind of do whatever you want with them. But yeah, in general, large language models are predictors of what text to put next. It's like if you've ever used your autocomplete on your phone where you're typing some text and then it will tell you the next
The word. Nightmare, the nightmare that I have with this.
But you know how it, when you're typing at the top, it'll have like three suggested next words that you might be wanting to type. That's like a really, really simple version of what's happening with ChatGPT, where it can look back much further and look ahead much further and then use all kinds of interesting data that it has been trained on to come up with an answer that actually fits the question that you gave it. It's pretty magical. And there's a lot of science that's going on where the leading edge people who are studying this still don't know exactly how it works. I mean, they know how to make it and they know what's happening sort of, but there's some things that are happening behind the scenes where it's like, wait, is there some underlying code to language that we've sort of stumbled upon here that, you know, this has figured out that we can't even, because if you think about it, it's not thinking about the answers that it gives you. Like as a human, if you ask me something, I'm going to process my experiences and my knowledge and my feelings. And I'm going to like rumble that around there for a little while and kind of contrast it with some different possibilities and then give you back something, right? ChatGPT is not doing that. It's just answering. Like it just knows immediately what an appropriate answer would be because of the patterns of language, which again, it's pretty magical and it's pretty interesting to see what will happen with this kind of technology going forward. But for right now, we have a lot of really cool applications for using it as an assistant. So that's what I would say is it's a digital assistant that can do anything text-based.
Aha, that was a very short answer, like that. So in November of last year, as you mentioned, this thing started and like, it like everybody was talking about it, like, oh my God, I don't have to write anymore. I don't have to think about it. And as photographers, we're like, oh my God, we found gold.
Yeah.
Because the majority of us, I'm going to include myself in that, we don't like writing, right? We think that it's very tedious. We just don't enjoy it. And then we go to people like you or to groups like Fuel Your Photos and you guys are like, you need to blog. And then I'm like, well, I guess I won't do blogging. And with this, you know, technology, it was like, oh my God, angels are singing. Now I can't blog about anything. But then comes like the other side of ChatGPT, especially in those early months, right? So November last year, what were some of the, you know, the things that people were like so excited about and then were like, well, pump your brakes here, because even though it sounds magical, it is not all rainbows. What are some of like the, you know, things that we should avoid when we're thinking about ChatGPT and we should consider before actually going all in?
Yeah. So it's tricky because I don't know if you can tell, but I am a huge fan of AI and I love the technology and I'm studying it. I use it pretty much daily, not just ChatGPT, but all kinds of AI tools. And I'm very excited about the future. But as someone who has been working with photographers and blogging, like you said, writing online, I'm a big advocate for personal publishing. That's one of the reasons why I love WordPress so much, is because their mission is to democratize publishing. And it's basically giving people a platform that they can own to own their voice online. And I think this is becoming more and more important. Just a couple of years ago, my wife got her Facebook just completely taken away with no chance of recovering it. And I've seen this happening to so many people. And there's so many other issues with platforms. So it's really great to have a personal publishing platform. Also, I'm sorry, I'm giving so much context here. But,
no, it's good. I like context.
With Google, there were some questions about whether this AI generated content would be able to rank. There was a lot of discussion around, will Google just detect that it's AI and then demote it? Because people are spamming with this, right? Mm-hmm. Like certainly people are pumping out millions and millions of words and just publishing and trying to get rankings to get traffic because they're trying to get ad revenue. They're trying to, whatever their end goal is, they're trying to make money on using this as spam. So the question was, will Google demote AI content? Will they even be able to detect it? Because there's a lot of AI detectors out there. And if you've ever tried one, I can tell you they're not very good. They will, you know, give false results pretty much, you know, every few times. You're not going to get a great AI detector. And as you get better AI detectors, the AI generators are going to learn how to avoid them. And it's just going to be this battle back and forth. But anyway, Google came out and very clearly said, we don't care if it's generated by AI, as long as it's helpful for humans. As long as you're following all of the guidelines that we've always been giving you about helpful content, then it's fine if you generate it, if you write it, if you, however you put it together, it doesn't really matter. We're not going to check that. We're going to check whether it's helpful. And a lot of the updates they've done lately, they call the helpful content updates. And that's generally what they're looking at. And one of the there was this thing called EAT, expertise, authoritativeness, and trustworthiness that they would look at for content. And they added a new one in called experience. And I think it's really interesting. They're looking for human experience. And they use examples for people who are doing reviews of products. Like, let's say you're doing a review of vacuum cleaners and you run it through ChatGPT and it just writes out this, you know, comparison. That's not as good as if a human actually bought the vacuum cleaners and tested them and gave you pictures and photos. And that kind of experience of a human goes a long way. And Google is working to detect that. Is this human written content for humans? Is it helpful to humans? So they do care about that. And how they're telling probably more AI on the back end that's like, you know, they've been trained to detect that kind of thing. But in general, whenever this all started happening, like what you were asking, you know, what should we avoid? One of the things I was telling people right away is don't use this to just write your content. Like you don't want to give it a prompt like, you know, let's see, let's say we wanted to write a guide to wedding venues in Miami. If I wanted to, I can, and even now if I have ChatGPT Pro, I can have it do web browsing. So I could just tell it to look up the best wedding venues in Miami and write me a summary of each. And if I gave it a pretty good prompt, it would spit out an article pretty easily that would be passable. I mean, if you looked at it, you might say, not you, Carolina, but like anyone might say, this is better than I would write it. So maybe I'll just publish this, right? And a lot of people started doing this where you just give it a prompt to write the entire article. It gives you an article and then you publish that article. I would say that's still what I would avoid. If you want to win in the long term. Now, I will give this a little bit of a caveat. That could still work. If you're the kind of person that thinks, you know, I could just write articles with ChatGPT and publish them and that feels good to you, I'm not going to tell you not to do it because there are some situations where I've seen people do this and start ranking with that content pretty well. Mm-hmm. So it's not impossible, But in general, if you want to win in the long term, you should be using ChatGPT more like an editor or a writing partner to help you with brainstorming, to help you with formatting, to help you with checking grammar and tone and additional questions people might have. And we can get into all this, but that's more of the direction that I like to see people going, is using this as their writing partner or their editor.
That's very interesting. You mentioned something about expertise, and I don't know if we have an answer for this, but let's say, for example, I have been blogging for 15 years, despite my disliking of it. I have a lot of content, right? I was ranking thanks to all your help before ChatGPT appeared. Let's say that somebody that has never blogged now is like, oh, I can pump 5 articles in 10 minutes. I'm just going to do this all day long. And now they create this huge library of content that has been written by AI. Do you think that actual Google will be able to notice somebody that has been doing this for years, that has, you know, a tone, a brand, voice, compared to somebody that just started today, that suddenly is pumping all this content, which is still good because it's answering, you know, users' questions, but obviously the tone is what it is, which is that ChatGPT.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's the thing. I think Google can tell, but I don't think they always do. This is weird thing about Google is that they're capable of doing a lot, but that doesn't mean they always do that on all documents and results because of the scale of the internet. It's so intensive to try to run all of the algorithms they could on everything that sometimes things like that will get through the cracks. And sometimes you will see people who just start publishing brand new content, don't really have a track record yet, and Google starts rewarding it. So it's not impossible that that could happen. But to be fair, they do have some systems that would make it less likely. Example would be backlinks. I mean, if you've been writing for 15 years, some of your articles are going to have been shared. Mm-hmm. Some of them are going to be linked to. Some of them are going to be, they're going to have some signals attached to them that show that this is popular content. So even comments, I know a lot of people like to just turn comments off on their blogs these days. A lot of it's spam. People don't really comment the way they used to on blogs. I'm one of the people trying to bring that back, by the way. This is a whole different conversation. I won't get into it, but I just federated my blog comments. So they're a part of ActivityPub. So anyone using Mastodon or theoretically in the future Threads can follow my blog, and whenever I post something new, it'll show up in their feed. And if they comment on it, that comment in their feed gets translated to my blog. So we're trying to, like, there's some things that are happening where we're trying to bring these sort of social aspects back to personal websites and especially on WordPress. I think that kind of stuff will play into this in the future. It's like, are real humans interacting with this? Do they care about it? Is it popular? Does it have a discussion happening? Is there a community around this? Are people talking about it? Are they sharing it? All of that kind of thing will certainly play into long-term winning content. If there's something that's just stale versus there's something that's actively used, I think Google will see that. And I guess, again, the backlinks make a big difference. The age of your domain, not just, I say that, I should be careful because sometimes people misinterpret this. I don't mean that like an old domain always ranks better, but like, the length of time that your brand has been building up authority does matter to some extent.
So, correct. It's always important, you know, those things. So, right. So we're happy. ChatGPT is here to help us, you know, to help us generate ideas, things like that. I wasn't using it since November. I was like, absolutely not. I'm not going to do it. First of all, I had some apprehensions about it because although we think that this is coming out of, I don't know, nowhere, obviously all this content is generated thanks to reading other content. Mm-hmm. So at the beginning, this might have been fixed I know nothing. So mm-hmm. at the beginning was a lot of talk of like plagiarism. Mm-hmm. What's happening? Where is ChatGPT finding all this information? Is this getting it from other people's blog? And now I'm going to copy paste this into my blog and it's going to be very similar content that Google is going to flag? Talk to me about it.
Yeah, it's a great question. And so early on, we launched last November with GPT 3.5. We're on GPT 4 if you're on Pro, but you can still use 3.5 for free. There is a difference in the two. Mm-hmm. The models have been trained on an enormous amount of data. from scraping the web, sure, from Wikipedia, from books that are, you know, in the public domain, from all kinds of sources. You can actually go and look. I don't believe OpenAI makes their source list public, but Meta just released a open source model, Lambda, I think is what it's called, and it is it lists their sources, and they're going to be very similar to OpenAI's sources. Now, that doesn't mean they're listing every single website, but it does tell you that they may have scraped the internet and what method they might have used for that or something like that. It's really complicated. And this brings up the idea that, you know how we can decide we don't want pages listed in Google by no indexing them? Mm-hmm. There are tags now, and there will probably be even more prominent in the future, where you can opt out of training data. So you can basically no AI index the content on your site if you don't want it to use it for training. Who knows whether they'll actually honor that. I think the bigger companies will. I think some of the smaller ones probably won't. But anyway, that's an interesting option. As far as can you plagiarize someone else's content? I will say this. I have not run across any situation where I think that I've gotten output that was directly plagiarized from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But it depends on how specific you get with your prompting and how specific your topic is. If it's only talked about in one or two places on the web, and it is that those places are in the training data, then it's very likely that the information that it knows about that very, very niche specific topic might be because of that one place that it was talked about online. So the more unique the information, the less likely that it's going to have lots of sources for training, and it might give answers that represent that one specific source. They've tried very hard to make it so that's not the case, where it's not using any one source. This is more apparent if you look at the image generation models. You'll find that, for example, when I use Midjourney sometimes, I might get, for certain types of prompts, I'll get back results that have watermarks on them. And they're like the stock photo websites that have watermarks if you don't purchase. They clearly trained on the images with the watermarks. And so sometimes you'll see those watermarks kind of appearing back into the photos. So, you know, in that way, like, do we have that happening with the language models? It's possible. And I do think if people want to really do this dirty, I think some people are doing this. You could go to someone's content. Let's say I go to your blog and I pick an article that you've written. I could just copy and paste that into ChatGPT and say, rewrite this for me in a different tone or something like that. And it's going to do it. Like, it's not going to have any questions about whether this is someone else's content or anything like that. And the output that it gives me, I would still consider that plagiarized.
Of course.
You just copied someone else's thing and told it to rewrite it. That doesn't count as new content, clearly. So it's possible. It is possible to plagiarize with ChatGPT, and the level of at which where it gets to be a legal issue versus a ethical issue, it's different in different people's minds. But it is possible to use the tool in a negative way that way. But I don't think that in general, if you're prompting it from scratch, that it's very likely for you to get content that is already written from someone else.
Friend, this is a short podcast intermission to remind you that every month I am uploading actionable short tutorials about SEO, blogging, content creation, website reviews, and much more on my Patreon. Each tutorial has a very specific goal to help you level up an aspect of your business. You can access these tutorials at any time and as many times as you need to. In addition, each month I am also hosting a live call where you can ask any questions regarding your business or marketing strategies. This is like having a tiny coaching call with me. You can currently access over 50 tutorials for only $10 a month. Join today. I have a direct link on the notes of this episode for you to check it out. Now, back to the episode. Well, what if we do a live thing here, right? I open my ChatGPT and I give it this prompt. And what about you open your ChatGPT and you give it exactly the same prompt and see what we get, okay?
So
let's do simple. Best wedding venues in Miami, because that's the blog that I want to write about. And I just want ChatGPT to give me some options. Let's see what I get versus what you get.
Okay, are you using GPT 3.5, GPT 4, or
3.5? ChatGPT 3.5. This is the free version for everybody, and I just want to see what kind of results we'll get. Because if everybody is using similar prompts, especially in a very niche, you know, audience, like, for example, wedding photography from a selective city, I want to see what we get.
All right.
All right.
Prompted, did you?
I did prompt it. Okay. What did you get first?
I got Vizcaya Museum and Gardens.
No. Okay. But hold on a second. Did you get like an intro?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Miami offers a variety of beautiful wedding venues to choose from, each with its own unique charm and style. The best wedding venue ultimately depends on your preferences, budget, and the size of your guest list. Here are some popular wedding venues in Miami.
Okay, I got it. Miami offers a wide range of wedding venues to suit varied taste and preference. The best wedding venues for you depends on your style, budget, and the size of your guest list. Here are some popular high-regarded wedding venues in Miami. Yeah. Very similar.
Very similar, yeah.
And then how many venues did they give you?
12.
It gave me 15.
Okay, interesting.
Okay, and I got at the top Vizcaya.
Yep.
Then I got the Biltmore.
Uh-huh, that's my number two as well.
Then I got the Temple House.
Uh-huh.
The Ancient Spanish Monastery.
Yep.
I got married there, by the way. The Cruz Building.
Okay, that's the first time it's different. My number five is the Kampong.
I don't even have that one on my list. Okay,
and number six. I don't have the Cruz Building on mine either.
What about, did you have the Moore Building?
Nope, not on this list.
Okay, Fisher Island.
Fisher Island is number 10 for me.
I lied. The Kampong is number 8 for me.
Okay.
Then I have the Ritz-Carlton, Key Biscayne.
Nope, not on here.
Okay, the Palms Hotel and Spa.
Nope.
The Addison at Boca Raton.
No, I don't have that one either.
Which technically, that shouldn't be on the list because that is like 40 miles away from Miami. But anyways, the Deering Estate.
Yep, got that one as 12.
The W South Beach?
Nope.
Fairchild Tropical Gardens?
Nope.
And Villa Woodbine?
Nope, not that one either. The last ones I had were the Alfred DuPont Building, Prez Art Museum, the Addition, Miami Beach, the Rusty Pelican, Fisher Island Club, we said that one, the Fontainebleau Miami Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And the Deering Estate was the one you said. So it's interesting. It got the first four exactly the same.
Yes.
And then some of the same ones after that. And if we ran this prompt over and over, it would give us slightly different ones each time.
Correct. But I just wanted to prove that if you're in a niche market as we are, let's say, you know, Miami wedding, and you just give that prompt, and let's say somebody else gives that prompt, what is going to give you is really, really similar.
It's very similar.
And that's when we start thinking like, this might not rank well, because, you know, first of all, and obviously, like the first paragraph that we got has like no brand tone to it, right? It has no personality. It has, you know, it gives me nothing other than maybe some facts. So I would say that with this little tiny exercise, if you're a photographer, here we have proof that although it gives you, you know, 15 ideas as to what are the best Miami wedding venues, you do have to like rewrite this in a way that is useful for your audience and also that has your tone, your voice, your brand, you know, voice.
Yeah, for sure. And I would say for me, this would have only been the very, very first step. And then we would take this, and we might have even had some other steps before this, but we would take this and run it through multiple other steps and try to get more information before we even start putting together an outline, which we would then, maybe you could help it get started with your writing your intro or something like that. But the goal would be that you're going to write some of it yourself, or very heavily edit what it gives you. But for example, let's just say we did want to write this article about the best wedding venues in Miami. When I start, I'm going to start with my searcher avatar. So I generally do some work to figure out who exactly am I trying to reach. And a lot of times I'll already have a searcher avatar that's built that I know is the kind of person that I'm trying to reach with my business. But if not, it could be a new one for this article. And so I would start with a prompt that's more like, tell me about couples that are planning a wedding in Miami. What are some of the different preferences that they might have for wedding venues? And what are common questions that people should ask before booking and touring a wedding venue? And I would ask that kind of question to see what
that is a better question or a better prompt than just best wedding venues in Miami. There is more thought into that.
Right. And then we, you know, when I say search your avatar, I might already know that my couples are, they are living in Miami specifically, or maybe they're not. Maybe they're living in another part of Florida, or maybe they're living in a different state. But I would know that that's like maybe a first point. And then I would say, you know, maybe I already know something about their budget. Maybe I know they want high end wedding venues with luxury options. Maybe I know that they want a backyard feel. Maybe I know that they want to have the ocean in as a big part of their wedding. Any of those things can give me a different kind of list. And so knowing exactly who I want to write this for, like for example, in Colombia, we don't have a lot of non-religious ceremonies that happen around here, but I would love to write more content for the people who don't want to have a religious wedding. And so that would be a searcher avatar for someone who's searching for not a church, not something that's typically going to be religious. What are my options for venues if it's a non-religious wedding? That would be a really interesting article that would be written to a very specific kind of person, a very specific searcher who wants a very specific kind of answer. And it would rule out some of the options that might be popular on other people's lists. So even just knowing the direction that you think you want to go, or knowing who you're trying to reach when you are writing, can give you a lot of differentiation when it comes to the type of prompts that you're giving ChatGPT and the kind of output that it's giving you.
I love that. I love to run a prompt that is more detailed. And again, I know that implies some thought into, you know, what you're trying to write. And sometimes people are trying to avoid that. They just want to use it as like the easiest, lowest hanging fruit. But we can just prove here that if you have more thought into your prompt, it's going to make a difference.
Yeah.
You also mentioned using ChatGPT as a partner in writing, as your editor, and I have been using it as my editor.
Yeah.
My husband was my previous editor. He was really annoyed at that. So it's been lovely to have ChatGPT, because I write a whole article and then actually my prompt, and I'm very polite with my ChatGPT. I'm like, Chat, could you please take a look at the grammar sentence, like the grammar construction on this article, and give me any advice? And then I just post my whole article, 300, 400, whatever amount of words I have. And then ChatGPT is so polite to me. And then, you know, it will tell me like it was written well or whatever. And they'll be like, but here are some suggestions.
Yep.
So now, as you know, now I myself become like my own editor, because now ChatGPT is giving me some options, and sometimes the options are really good, but sometimes I'm like, but I don't speak like that.
Right.
This doesn't sound like me. I am way more casual on my talking, or maybe that word is a word that is really big for my vocabulary. Like I don't use that word. So like writing that word is going to feel silly. So I grab and take, you know, what I like, pretty much. That's what I have been using it for.
Yeah. If you're someone who already has a large sample of your writing available, and that doesn't always have to be from a blog post, by the way, if someone like you have a podcast, you could take the transcripts from your podcast. You could take your current blog post and you could do some custom training. You can do this with ChatGPT. Well, maybe not with ChatGPT, with GPT-4 or GPT-3.5. If you have access to the API and you can do some development, you can train it on your data. But there's other tools out there that are becoming more and more popular. There's quite a few. I can't name any off the top of my head, but where you can just upload some files that are your own, you know, content or whatever tone you're trying to match. And you can train it on that and have it respond in a way that's more similar to you. So that's an interesting option that I think in the future, I believe more and more people will have this sort of writing assistant that is trained on their own voice, tone, style, preferences, knowledge base, your own journal, your whatever it is that you want to kind of give it about you. It will be able to take that and to make the writing more like you.
interesting that you mentioned that, because I wrote this email. It was like a reply email. It was super formal, but I wanted to check the grammar and all that. So I put it on ChatGPT and it gave me like a very, again, like a very strict answer, right? Like it was very formal. And then I was like, here is a sample of what I write like on a email. Could you give me a formal answer on this tone?
Yeah.
And it did. I was like, I love it. I love you, yes. ChatGPT. Thank you.
Giving an example is one of the best things you can do. And, you know, this is probably a little too advanced for this conversation. But if you're using ChatGPT Pro, I highly recommend getting into the custom instructions because you can do. So the first thing it gives you in custom instructions is what would you like ChatGPT to know about you to provide better responses? And it gives you some starter ideas, like where are you based? What do you do for work? What are your hobbies and interests? What subjects can you talk about for hours? What are some goals you have? You can put that in. And then it has, what would you, or how would you like ChatGPT to respond? Then it gives you things like how formal or casual should it be? How long should the responses generally be? What do you want addressed? Should it have opinions or should it remain neutral? You can give it all these custom instructions in these two boxes and it will completely change what it outputs. So I've actually done that a few times. One of my favorites so far is I told it that it was a bot to generate intent behind search queries and that it would always give me the intents back in a list of a certain format that I gave it, and that it would take any question and it would try to think of other questions that are similar, things that I didn't think about, blah blah blah, whatever. I give it all these instructions around that. So you would give it a simple question like, what are the best wedding venues in Miami, and it would return just a list of other questions that are things that you should also be asking if you're curious about the best wedding venues in Miami. That was really interesting to tune it to give a really specific kind of response like that. A handful of prompts like that could just be superpowers if you go through the same process every time you write, like even when you're doing the editing step, right? So grammar and tone, certainly important. We have one student, you probably have seen him in the membership, David, Drunk David, we call him, from the Drunk Wedding Photographer.
Yes.
And before he started using ChatGPT, his writing was rough. And he will admit this. I'm not like saying this in a bad way. He jokes about it all the time. And Spanish was his first language, I guess, and just had some broken English. And like, if you talk to him, it's just like, you know, it sounds great. He's great at conversation. Mm-hmm. But when he starts writing it, it just kind of falls apart a little bit. And you can't quite follow exactly what he was trying to say. He started
That makes sense in Spanish, but it didn't make sense in English. Kind of
exactly.
Thing. Because it happens to me sometimes. My husband's like, what are you trying to say? I'm like, it makes sense in Spanish.
Yeah, exactly. And so he, started running it through ChatGPT and just getting some help with like rewording some things. And the writing now, it reads much, it's much cleaner. The thoughts are more like exactly what he was trying to express. So that's great. But I like to use the editing step to think about things that I missed in the writing. That's one of my favorite things is like, if you are the reader of this article, what objections might you have to what I said? Is anything that I said offensive? Is anything that I said potentially going to be taken the wrong way? Is anything that I said not clear to someone who doesn't have subject expertise? Is it, these kinds
of questions. Love that. I never even thought that could be something to ask ChatGPT, but I'm about to go and rewrite my whole thing.
Yeah. And if you have a searcher avatar, again, you can give it some, my reader is this, 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 and this. You can even just give it bullet points of things that are true about your reader. And you could say, based on that, how do you think this reader would respond? And you could even give it to pretend, by the way. You can say something like, pretend you're this reader and you're going to leave a comment on my blog. What would your comment say? You can try to get these, and you might even tell it another time. Okay, now pretend like you are, you have a negative opinion about this blog and you're going to write a negative comment. What would that negative comment say? Sometimes forcing it to like give you something like that will push it to give you answers that it wouldn't if you just asked, like, what might someone say about this? If you tell them a specific scenario and tell them that they have to be angry or they have to be, you know, ChatGPT has to be upset about this, it'll force itself to give that sort of
response. My ChatGPT is so polite. I don't want to upset him.
Yep.
this was so, so good. How much is currently, this is 2023. So if so, you're listening to this podcast episode, I don't know, whenever, this is the current price. How much is the price for ChatGPT Pro right now?
I'm paying $20 a month for mine. I think.
And you would say that it is worth it?
For me, as a power user, absolutely it's worth it, because it also unlocks a few other things. So besides the custom instructions, I mean, first of all, GPT-4 is included in that. And you get 50 messages every 3 hours for plus users. Mm-hmm. That's more than it seems, because you can do so much with one prompt. So GPT-4 is better at complex reasoning and creativity. Mm-hmm. So you can give it like multi-step prompts that it will follow much more in line with what you were expecting when you gave it that kind of multi-step prompt. Multiple instructions all in one prompt. It does a pretty good job. The difference between 3.5 and 4 is it's noticeable. If you run the same prompts through both regularly, you'll see that 4 is much more refined. Also, with 4, with Plus, you get browse with Bing. So you can browse the web. So you can give it a question that it doesn't have in its data set, and it will go browse an article. You can give it a specific URL. It can go and read that article and use that as part of its response. It has advanced data analysis, which is really great for coding. If you're writing code and you need it to debug something, it does a really good job with that kind of analysis. Plugins. So there's plugins that you can use with ChatGPT. There's a lot of different examples, but one of them might be like you could ask it to book a hotel, and it's got like a hotels.com plugin or something like that.
Got it.
So it can be more of an assistant with certain sites that have made their API accessible through the plugins. And then DALL-E 3 is in Plus as well. So you can use, you can do up to 50 messages every 3 hours on DALL-E 3 for image generation, which DALL-E 3, if you're into image generation and you've tried something like Midjourney, DALL-E 3 has really become more conversational, where mm-hmm. you can describe the images that you want in lots of detail with lots of words, and it will pay attention to all of those words instead of it being like before, when with Midjourney you're like giving it keywords and stuff for it to generate, and now it's more like just describe it and it will do a really good job. So for those reasons, it's absolutely worth even just playing with it for a month to see if these are features that you would use. I also use the API. So you can get an API key. And there's a lot of tools out there that are starting to make it so that people can use their software with OpenAI as long as they bring their own API key, because the usage costs money, right? And so for a software company, I'm even developing some software to help people with blogging, right? And so the idea is all of these things that we've been talking about, the prompts are sort of built in. You press a button and it does this more advanced prompt that's going to output intents or things like that. But if I just made that software available for a cost and one person comes in and just uses it excessively, they might actually cost me more than I'm charging them in their subscription or whatever. So a lot of companies are making it so you bring your own API key and you pay for the usage cost. And mm-hmm. then, maybe the tool is free outside of that, or it's a small subscription or something like that. So it's important to know that if you really want to be a power user, you're probably going to want to think about the API. And you can, there's a playground that they have that you can like do all kinds of other testing, and it's a
lot. Seems like it's a lot.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, you give us so many good ideas, points, knowledge about ChatGPT. So thank you so much for doing so. Before I let you go, what is something that you are loving other than AI?
Oh man, other than AI. It's funny because I feel like all the things that I've been exploring lately are in some way related to AI, because even I've been getting into game development, and I've been doing more coding, JavaScript mm-hmm. and Python. Like all of this stuff is only because of AI that I've even been able to get back into it. But I'll give you a better answer. I'll just say soccer. My daughter has been playing soccer and been really into it. And
love it. Do you watch Ted Lasso?
Yes, I watched Ted Lasso, watched Premier League and all this stuff. So I just started really getting into it, helping with coaching and her last tournament is this weekend. So that's been a fun season of life.
Go team.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, and sorry to tell you, but that's actually called football. I know you would argue with me, but that's football, okay? Corey, where could people find you and find all your offers and all the things that you have?
Yeah, fuelyourphotos.com for all of our stuff related to Fuel Your Photos. I do actually have a ChatGPT for Photographers article up on Fuel Your Photos that has even more prompt ideas and more creative things you can do with it. So check that out. And then CoreyPotter.com, I'm starting to bring it back. I'm trying to do some more personal blogging. Like I said, I'm trying to get the federated comments and all that kind of stuff. So I'm probably going to be some interesting experiments there if you want to follow that.
Fantastic. Corey, thank you so much for your time and for your knowledge. It was a pleasure having you again here on the Talk Republic. I make sure to link to all your things here on the description of this episode. And for all of you that listen all the way to the end, thank you so much. Do not plagiarize, but use ChatGPT on the right way. So thank you for listening, and I'll catch you soon with another episode. Until then, ciao.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. For more info about marketing tips for photographers and show notes, please visit thetogrepublic.com. If you enjoyed today's show, please go to iTunes and leave us a review. Want even more? Join our marketing community group. Just search for The Tog Republic Group on Facebook. Until next week.